Good morning, and today we're in Cape Town for the Mining Indaba, and because we're all here, I grabbed two of our longest serving, staunchest supporters of Women in Mining South Africa. We have Megan Jarvis, who is on our board, she's one of our directors, and we have Jeanette McGill, Dr. Jeanette McGill, who has flown all the way from Australia for our podcast. Megan, you're a partner at Weber Wenzel. You specialize in commercial and corporate law, mergers and BEE transactions. So can we start, what is a partner in a law firm?
So a partner in a law firm is actually the owner of the business. So we practice law depending on what your particular speciality is. I've been an M&A lawyer in mining and construction for a number of years and have worked predominantly in the mining and construction industries. And being a partner means that we are able to guide the strategy of the business going forward, the direction that the firm needs to take. And essentially, we're the owners of the business that look after it for people who work in this environment.
Jeanette, I googled you, even though we have been friends for about 30 years. You're a mining executive, a geoscientist, a mountaineer, and you're known for fearless leadership underground and above ground. Tell us a little bit more about your background in the mining industry.
So for me, I guess my underpinning has been around just a breadth of experience. So I started by studying geology. I also studied mineral economics, but I also put that to practice by working in production. So my career has been a progressive growth path from production days and then being able to have the privilege of working both on the producer side of the fence as well as then working on the supply side, not only supplying direct product into the mine, but in a couple of adjacencies like telecommunications as well. And that's given me a really broad view on the global mining sector.
And you obviously joined the mining sector quite a while ago. And I mean, we both know that it was really, really hard. So can you tell us a couple of things about the reality of how hard it was when we started in the mining industry?
Absolutely. And I think something that gets often forgotten in this narrative is how the history evolved of women in mining in South Africa. And in that context is that it was illegal for women to work underground in South Africa until 1997.
Yeah. And by that time, we had both graduated.
Exactly. And so that meant that career paths like mining engineering were not available at all because women couldn't work underground. What happened in 1997 was that the law forbidding women to work underground was repealed and a new law was instigated. And that law, funny enough, if you look at the code, it was identical to a law that was prevalent in Canada and in Australia that they had actually repealed in the 1970s, allowing women to work underground in those geographies. That law was actually placed into the South African space in 1997. And what that allowed women to do, women could then go underground, but only in two capacities. One, if they were providing medical support, if they were nurses or part of a response in a medical sense. And the second way women could go work underground was if they went down for a part shift. So here again, the career path of mining engineering wasn't possible because you had to spend an entire shift underground, whilst being a geologist meant that you could go underground and then the rest of your shift was using the time to plot sections and maps and the rest of the work. And so that's how a lot of women entered the underground geology space, was actually through the pathway of geology and stuff. And that's why when I got my underground blasting certificate in 2000, I became the second woman to do that. It's simply how young our sector is relative to the other spaces in the world. And the last thing I'll just say is that what I was always very proud of in the South African mining sector in the context is just how quickly we ramped that participation up. such that the numbers of participation of women in mining, if you now compare how it looks in other jurisdictions, in the South African context, we had this massive ramp up from that opportunity to where we are now, and we had very similar numbers levels. And through WIM, I think you've done various studies across the time.
So we have come up from 4% to about 26%, which is phenomenal. Megan, you and I think our first lunch we ever had, we talked about obviously how hard it is in the mining industry, but you also pointed out that it's really hard in other industries like law.
When I entered the legal profession, women were certainly not a majority in the profession. Now, I'm pleased to say that within Webber Wentzel, I think we've probably got more female lawyers than we have male lawyers, particularly at the junior level. So it's been very heartwarming to see the number of women who are choosing law as a profession. Within certain sectors, such as mining and construction, you still find that that is predominantly a very male-dominated area. But we are seeing more women involved in construction law and in mining law, which is really heartwarming to see. And obviously also encouraging a lot of Black young women to actually enter into these areas. We see that there is also a demand from our clients to ensure that we are appropriately transformed from both a gender and race perspective.
Yeah, so that brings me to my next thought. I think we've all felt discriminated against as women. Are you still finding that within your profession, outside the profession, you know, when you're dealing with clients?
So I think there's been a lot of work that has been done on educating people around things like sexual harassment, violence in the workplace, etc. We have laws that have obviously been introduced to try and deal with those sorts of conduct, which are obviously unacceptable. I think there has been a marked change in how clients actually interact with women professionals. I remember when I first started practicing, you know, I'd be called girly or sweetie or sweetheart or other sorts of similar nicknames. That doesn't happen anymore. So I think there has been a shift and a recognition of women for their abilities in the profession rather than based on their gender.
But we still have to work twice as hard to prove that we're as good, don't we?
I sometimes think that still is the case. And because whilst what Megan has said is absolutely valid and also on the global space, I think there still remains sometimes unconscious bias. And so I often think sometimes the behaviors aren't necessarily malicious, but they're just this residual unconscious bias where we do have to make sure that we show up and perform and do certain things where our male counterparts probably wouldn't have to work as hard.
I think that's accurate. And I think what also happens often in the South African context is that the primary role of caregiver for children is often still the woman. So in a situation where you have two working parents, the mother often takes more of the responsibility for the family. So I think women often feel like the ham and the sandwich because they're expected to deliver at home and they're expected to deliver in the workplace. And I think given that unconscious bias, you often don't want not being able to do something in the workplace to be as a result of your sort of commitments that you might have at home. So I do think women probably work harder in many ways than their male counterparts do.
So we're our own worst enemies, really.
We don't always like to ask for help either.
I'd agree with that too.
What do you mean we don't always? We don't. At the moment, there's a lot about resilience and grit in the news and in social media, and about how important it is to have that. And from our perspective, I think what we're talking about is the fact that we can push through, that we don't give up. And I think that it's probably a really good trait that most women have. We like terriers, aren't we? Once we have that bone in our teeth, we don't let go.
So I think resilience is very important. I think mental strength is something that's also very important. I think for women, our secret weapon is often our EQ, so your emotional intelligence, being able to sort of read a room, sometimes pick up nuances. And I think that makes women in leadership sort of very valuable. I think we do bring a diversity to the table, and I think we have a hidden strength. We don't like to give up easily, and we like to find solutions.
Absolutely. I think also from our perspective is around doing all of that grit and determination, but not at the expense of compassion. Mm. You know, I think that's an element that is a really good juxtaposition at the moment in that conversation, where females, I think, are really good at being able to provide not only self-compassion, but compassion for others. And that's really what's required often in the workplace at the moment, where we need to get things done.
And again, I'm wondering if we bring this on ourselves. Quite often in a field camp where I'm the only woman, I end up the mother as well. And do I do it to myself? Am I unconsciously biased and think that that's what I should be doing?
I think it's often trying to go against the stereotypes, right? I'm sure you've had similar experiences in your careers where it was previously assumed that we would either provide the tea or we would write the notes in meetings. And I think as leaders, the opportunity to just have that determination and the presence to decline the opportunity to do things. I recall also dealing with some clients in one of my roles, and these clients walked into the room and they were trying to sell a range of things, and they were automatically selling this option to the men in the room, except I was the person that had to make the final choice. I was the budget holder. And they didn't impress me at all. They didn't even look at me in the conversation. And I excused myself and left the room. And this team was like, yeah, you should have been talking to her. She's the person in charge. And so I think that, you know, there are these range of things that have almost been codified in the expectations. And that goes again to sometimes the subconscious bias, but I also think as women, like in your example, Nolene, is to be able to sometimes catch that it's valid to care, but at the same time, sometimes to go what is appropriate such that you don't fall into some of those paradigms. Mm.
Jeanette and Megan were patrons of WIMSA. So the patronage came about, I can't even remember, but it was a while ago. And every time we had an event or a conference, young women would get up and say, we need role models in the industry. And you guys were the role models. And so obviously with WIMSA, we've changed things a bit now. And we've brought in a board. Megan, you're on the board. How important do you think mentorship and patronage is?
I think they are very important. I think it's quite difficult sometimes to succeed in an environment without having role models. Firstly, I think they give you the confidence or the belief that if somebody who looks like you has got there, that you can also do that, or that that is also a path open to you. Secondly, I think it's always very helpful to have somebody who has worked within an organization, knows some of the stumbling blocks and pitfalls, who can impart some knowledge and wisdom, who can provide some guidance, who can be a sounding board. And thirdly, I think having a champion is always very important within an environment, somebody who can be your cheerleader. And I think the more of that sponsorship, mentorship, champion, being a champion for other women we have, I think that just creates an exponential effect.
And I also really get warm-hearted when I have the opportunity to be back in the environment, such as where we've been this week around Mining Indaba, to re-interact and meet people that come and thank me for the opportunities that they've now had by either, as Megan says, seeing the example that we led, or alternatively just the mentoring and being able to support them in various roles. And, you know, that's an important piece of this. I think that WIMSA, from those fledgling days with the young organization, the patient base, to where it's grown now to the significant platform where there's a range of people, because there's so many adjacencies in the mining sector where women are able to now get roles and to be able to come and join the organization and find somebody in the structure that is aligned to a myriad of opportunities in the mining sector. I think that's been exceptionally powerful to watch that growth in WIMSA.
And it also does mean that quite often we now are not the only woman in the room, bringing the young woman up with us. So yesterday in the breakfast, one of the people in the audience was talking about how people, women, very often do not support other women. Pull her down syndrome, I think it is. Are we still seeing that as much as we used to? Is it worse? How is it that people that are supposed to be supporting us and helping us grow, how is it that they're not? Is it about jealousy?
I think it's probably more about the particular individual in question, because I think generally there has been a huge improvement in women supporting other women. And I think one of the things that men have always done well historically is their ability to network, whether it's been in the pub, on the golf course, old boys club, etc. And I think women have been much better at building their own networks in different ways. It might not be at the pub or on the golf course, although obviously women can still play golf or have a drink in the pub. But I think we're seeing women being a lot more collegial and forming better relationships and having bigger networks with more reach. So I'm not so sure how real this woman is pulling other women down, and I suspect it might be more individuals than a commonplace thing.
I totally agree with you. I feel that women are much more supportive and want to bring other women with them. But of course, what you were saying about men networking, and that's exactly the reason WIMSA was formed, because we realized that men inherently know how to do this, and we didn't have those platforms. So that's how we started WIMSA, as a networking platform for professional women. But just to stay with mentorship for a little bit, I've been part of the WIMSA mentorship for ages and also other mentorship programs. And what we're finding at the moment is that everybody wants to have a mentor, but they're not willing to put in the work. Are you finding that?
So I think the secret is perhaps trying to find a way of interacting with people coming into the industry now with youngsters, and they see the world differently. So I think part of the lesson for us is taking stock and perhaps learning new ways to actually deal with people. And I do think that what does need to continue to be emphasized is that you get to positions through hard work, that simply because you have a degree or you have a qualification doesn't mean that that's the end point, that there is still effort and learning that has to occur. And even having been in this industry for 30 years, there's still new things one learns every day.
I think for myself around mentoring, it's understanding that doesn't necessarily always have to be hierarchical in sense of age or position. And I think mentoring can be far more organic if you consider the people around you. And to, for me, I actually find it really valuable. You know, I've also been in the sector for a while, but I've got people that I see as up and coming, young people that I can actually tap into. And I consider a range of 20-year-olds is part of my mentors in a way of keeping me connected and to close the loop. And so I think to go beyond around, yes, be part of a formal mentoring program and access resources, but really take that approach as something that you've got to drive yourself and take self-ownership for mentoring. So being part of a formal program is a resource, but then also to really own your own mentoring approach and who is on it. Are there people more experienced? Are there people maybe younger than you that have just looked at the world differently? The broad approach, I think, is a really good one.
But mentoring, of course, is only successful if both the person mentoring and the person being mentored put in the work in that relationship.
I also think it's really important that there is a connection.
Has to be.
We used to do a speed mentoring at Windsor. And yeah, if there is no chemistry, it's not going to work. I've been in the industry for 30 years, and it really has changed in that time. As Jeanette said, I couldn't work underground. I couldn't go into the pubs with my friends because we weren't allowed in pubs. So I think it's really changed from an industry where we were fighting to get into a position to an industry where we were taken into the position but weren't really accepted. And I think now we're talking about inclusion and equality. How do you see the mining industry or your industry or any industry changing that it's all equal and there is no fight and we're all just geologists and lawyers? How are we going to drive the mining industry together?
That's the million-dollar question. That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I think it's to continue doing a lot of the good work that we have been doing. I think the point around unconscious bias is an important one. So I think being aware of that and looking out for things like that, I think it is finding opportunities for the people who are best for a particular project or job to be able to sort of work together without forgetting and having to balance that against trying to actually redress some of the inequalities of the past. So it is a really complex and difficult tightrope to walk sometimes. But I think if you do it with honesty, with empathy, with fairness, and with transparency, we should be able to get to a situation where we have a more equal and more inclusive environment.
Also think that we shouldn't underestimate how far things have come. It's really heartening always for me to return and just see, I can really notice the integration and the empowerment that has happened. And when I went and had other roles, global roles and interactions both in Northern America as well as in Australia, you know, if I see that as the end point where your question, Aline, was, you know, how do we know when we've got there? And sometimes when I go and interact in those other mining communities and other conferences around the world, there is a sense that gender is a non-issue. People can just show up and be who they are for their credible skill set. And so, you know, I think in the South African context, it's around getting to that point that you said earlier. I thought it was really good about how, you know, no more sweeties and girlies, yeah, that people can just show up as they are into the work environment. And the gap is definitely closing from a South African context. And the end game is looking at these other geographies where people can literally just be themselves.
You said, Megan, you said that, you know, grit and determination is something that we have to do every day and be aware of every day. How about one instance where you wanted to give up and just leave the industry? What made you stay, other than grit and determination?
Well, it's, I suppose what's always made me stay is the passion for the law, and believing that we can make a difference in the context and in which we work. And so that's always been a heartening pillar to sort of come back to. And I love what I do, and for the most part, love the people that I actually work with. And I think it's very heartwarming, I think, to actually see the transformation that has taken place within the industry. And I think we can be proud of what we have done.
I like Jeanette's comment about it being heartwarming, because it is.
It is.
It is great to see how far we've come, and we've been part of it.
Of course. Small part.
A very small part, but we have been a part of it. Anything that you'd like to add, Jeanette, about that defining moment in your career?
No, I've had a few defining moments, and such we don't sit here until sunset. The one that comes to mind right now is I was working underground, and I had been seeing a challenge with the hanging wall in a particular portion of the mine. And every day I would notice that it hadn't been correctly supported. And every day I would share verbally, but also every day I would come out from underground and write technical notes stating that this was my observational challenge with what I was seeing. And I was overlooked. You know, it was a case of, what does she know about? She's the girl. However, after doing this for a few weeks, there was a utility vehicle that was driven into the section of the mine. And that portion of hanging wall fell out and collapsed onto the vehicle. And the vehicle was pancaked. And fortunately, the people that were driving it were nowhere close. And of course, because of this incident, the very first person that got called upon by the mine manager was the sectional geologist, me, and berated for why had I not ever shared this fact. And I was able then to produce all my paperwork with my daily underground reports and notes. And, you know, the mine manager could absolutely see I'd done what was required. It was simply that I wasn't taken seriously about my observations and the fact that I had training. I had technical training that could see this. And I think that for me, that was a defining moment in that it woke a lot of people up to the fact that here I was as a competent, technically trained individual with a role and responsibility. And the men really went, wow, you know, you knew that. And we sidelined you. And it's just a small vignette. And there were various other interesting moments too. But that's how far things have come for me, I think. People are a lot more able to put their voice forward, express, and be heard. And we had to, unfortunately, push to be heard. And sometimes it resulted in the loss of assets. But I hope that that's not the case anymore.
And sometimes you have to bite the bullet and leave, because sometimes it's just unbearable. And you have to make that call and go, enough. Which is sad for the mining industry when women at our level and a little bit younger, senior management, start leaving because it impacts on the industry. And then we also have the problem with our pipeline, because we really don't have enough women coming into the industry. That's my two cents. I left.
Well, I wouldn't say you left, Marlene. I think the reality is that, you know, you found a way to continue to contribute in a way that makes sense to you, and what you and the team have done to continue the narrative shouldn't be underlooked.
It's very important that we are able to contribute in different ways and different positions.
I think supporting other women within the industry is very critical. And I think together we can continue on this journey and achieve greater things.
Thank you for joining us for this powerful conversation with Jeanette McGill, Megan Jarvis, and myself. Today's discussion reminded us that thriving in a male-dominated industry takes courage, persistence, and a deep belief in your own capability. We hope that our stories inspire you to keep pushing boundaries, lifting others as you rise, and continuing to break new ground in your own journey.